Hello listeners, Mark here. Just a reminder, in case you've forgotten since last week, that Laura's audio might not be as good as it usually is during this episode due to technical difficulties during the recording. However, hopefully it should sound quite a bit better than last week, thanks to the efforts of community hero Joe Ressington. Thanks, Joe.
Welcome to Season 8, Episode 10 of the Ubuntu Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be discussing Snappy. If you don't know what that is, keep listening. We'll also have some Come On My Love, and we'll go over your feedback. I'm Laura, and joining me this week are Alan.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Martin.
Hello.
And Mark.
Hello.
Hello.
In no particular order.
In no particular order. Yes. Good. Thank you, Samantha. what have we been up to since last time? Mark?
I've been running Cyanogen OS 12 on my phone, which just updated this week.
Is that your one phone?
My one plus one phone.
That's
yes.
Two phone.
It's been, yeah. Yes, my two phone. Yeah, it came running Cyanogen mod 11.
Okay.
And it's now updated to Cyanogen OS 12.
And how?
Not much.
How is it based?
Much the same as. I mean, it's based on Android Lollipop, so it's got the newness of that. Other than that, it's broadly similar to Cyanogen Mod 11 was. Although it's got a few additional features. There's an interesting looking one called Baton, which is Baton. Which is a tool for if you've got several devices running Cyanogen, you can log into Baton on all of them, and it'll not only back up your data for each of your apps, but you can also share the state of an app between devices. So you can be running an app on, say, your phone, and you could send the state of that app to your tablet, and it'll just carry on running on your tablet.
Wow, this is like Jack Bauer in 24 saying,
yeah,
send it to
exactly,
my screen.
Send it to my screen.
Awesome.
Yeah, which looks really cool. The only thing is, it doesn't really tell you anything about, is it encrypting your data? Where's your data going? Or anything like that. So until I can find out something about that, I'm not signing up for it, basically.
And is this a Cyanogen service?
It's a partnership between Cyanogen and a company called NextBit.
Okay, they provide Baton.
Yes.
Right. Cool.
But it's exclusive to Cyanogen.
Cool.
At the moment.
Martin, what have you been up to?
Well, I did make it to the Egham Raspberry Jam a couple of weeks ago. And I met Albert, the organiser, who was rather brilliantly demonstrating his mind reader on Ubuntu Mate for the Raspberry Pi 2, which put a big smile on my face.
Brilliant.
And I also met Joe Ressington there from every other podcast, and he's been doing some interviews, so I'm sure you'll find out all that happened at the Egham Raspberry Pi Jam from the Linux Luddites in an upcoming show. And in other Raspberry Pi-related news, I've exchanged some emails with Eben Upton, and by the time you hear this, you should be able to download Ubuntu Mate for the Raspberry Pi 2 from the Raspberry Pi website, which is terrific.
Nice.
Excellent.
That's really good. Awesome news.
What about you, Alan?
I've been playing Windows games on Linux.
Yeah. What have you been using to do that?
Steam. I didn't even know.
Heretic.
Well, I knew it existed. Yeah. Whatever. I knew you could play this. You could do this kind of game streaming from one machine to another.
Oh,
and
I see.
My yes. Windows machine, which has some Windows games on it, happened to be switched on at the point when I launched Steam on my Linux box.
Yes.
And the Linux box said connecting to your Windows machine. And I thought, what? And on my Linux machine, I clicked stream on a Windows game. It happened to be GTA 5, which isn't available for Linux. And I was playing on my Linux machine, streaming from my Windows machine. And it was brilliant.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really cool. So it's quite a nice way to play, you know, for games that are not available on Linux. you know, have a Windows machine somewhere on your network with Steam running, with your collection of games on, and you can run them on any of your Linux machines that have also got Steam. That's quite cool.
The other thing I find it useful for is if you've got one machine which is your gaming rig with all of the graphics, then and you can just use a whatever laptop somewhere else in the house and just stream it with all the performance from your big gaming rig.
Yeah, there's no way my laptop would be able to play GTA 5 at 1080p, but actually it can, because it's streamed from another machine that actually has the grunt to be able to do it. So, yeah. How about you, Laura? What have you been up to?
I got 3 whole minutes off my park run personal best time last Saturday.
Wow. How long does it take to do a park run then?
It used to take me 34 minutes 13, and last week it took me 31 minutes 13.
Wow.
Are you using some app, some technology to track this? Or an old-school style stopwatch that your sports teacher would have had?
Parkrun tracker, officially. I use Strava, the service itself, to trace the GPS trace of where I've been. But the timing on that isn't great because I start and stop it at funny times and stuff. But that's the official times that Parkrun give us.
Excellent. Well done.
Thank you.
Should we get on with it?
Let's.
Yes.
So this week, we're recording on the 5th of May, and this is the start of the Ubuntu Online Summit, which is the virtual online version of the Ubuntu Developer Summit that we used to have in person. And Mark Shuttleworth gave his pre-Ubuntu Online Summit keynote yesterday on Monday. And if you didn't see it, it's available on YouTube. We'll link to it in the show notes. And in it, he gave a kind of state of the nation and plans, or some high-level plans for 1510 and 1604, and also put out some other calls to action. And I thought we should probably talk about this. So, Mark, you sat and watched it, didn't you?
I did, yes. So the first... Well, he started with it with a small presentation about Ubuntu Snappy, which is this new... version of Ubuntu where you have sort of like bits of the system in isolated chunks which plug into other bits of the system. So you have like a kernel bit and you have a core OS bit and then you have apps on top of that, rather than having, you know, the traditional package manager that we know and love. So he was talking quite a lot about this and how it's being targeted at embedded developers. So people... the kind of people who make things like DDWRT for routers apparently are quite interested in this because it provides a way of having the sort of the core system bit easily standardized across lots of devices and then just having like the kernel bit specified for each device. And then you can easily update the bit in the that does all the OS stuff and that does the app stuff separately. Which is quite a compelling use case for them by the sound of it.
It sounded to me like it was basically Ubuntu running the like underlying the Internet of Things in a consistent and secure way.
Yeah, basically, yeah, because you've got this one sort of you've got this Ubuntu Snappy image, which can then just plug onto whatever hardware enablement bit you need for your specific device, I suppose. And then there's other companies, apparently, like printer companies, he mentioned, thinking of running Ubuntu on their printers, which would be cool. Mm. Yeah.
So is that how we get to the 200 million users? Is we're in every printer and in every drone and router.
And Ubuntu on every desktop.
Yeah, maybe.
and every fridge.
Yeah.
So the interesting, there are many interesting things about Snappy, and there's lots of misconceptions and lots of worry in the community, wider community about Snappy. Did he talk a little bit about... Snappy and desktops, and not just the IoT stuff, but the like traditional desktop as well.
I think a lot of the desktop stuff he mentioned was more about the convergence side of things. He may have talked about Snappy on the desktop, but the more stuff that caught my ear was about the fact that it's going to be the way the phones are working. They're migrating from Qlik packages to Snappy, and then they're going to converge, so your desktop will be running on that system as well.
Yeah. Is it part of this whole thing to make it more secure? Like, isolating things.
That's part of it. I mean, he did mention, I saw the first half of it. I was busy working for the rest of it. But he did mention that part of the compelling argument for Snappy over Debian packages, for example, is at the point when you install a Debian package, the person who made that package, to invoke a phrase that he used once, has root on your machine. The maintainer scripts that are run as a Debian package is installed run as root and can touch any file on your file system. And we depend on the people who made those packages not to mess that up. But equally, users don't necessarily want some random application they install from the internet to have root over their device. Maybe they want to have that confined. And I think that's part of what Click packages give you. And then that's extended with Snappy packages, is that each app is confined and it can't go outside that confinement. So yes, there is an element of security in there, along with some other benefits.
I listened to the Snappy desktop talk today in UOS, and the other key difference that I hadn't twigged is that Snappy packages don't have to be as discrete as packages are currently. So at the moment, for example, you might install Apache as a package, and you might install MySQL as a package, or MariaDB and PHP as a package. But Snappy packages could be all of those things together as a chunk of things that all come together. So the talk today was about the desktop Next and using Snappy packages to deliver the desktop. And effectively, the base Unity environment would be a whole package which sits on top of Snappy Core. So instead of installing each of the different packages that make up that desktop environment, you just install something called Unity 8.1, and you get all of the necessary bits that make up that desktop environment. And then maybe you just have snap packages for the applications that you add on top of that, for things like Firefox and LibreOffice. And if you take that out to the server space, the best example I've been able to think of is if you've ever had to install Zimbra, that is a collection of devs, and each dev has a number of bits of functionality, and those include multiple applications. So actually, Zimbra would be a good candidate to be a snap package, where it's this big amorphous blob of several different applications working in consort. And then you get the atomic updates forwards and backwards. So if your update breaks your application, you can roll back to the previous point release and restore the application to how it was working before.
And I think the goal with these is also that it's not just the application that gets rolled forward and back, but the data as well. So if you upgraded, and as part of the upgrade, it modified loads of data and that broke, you could roll back and undo those changes to the data along the way. So it wouldn't, upgrading isn't a one-way path. You can undo the upgrade as well.
Yeah.
There was an interesting thing that he mentioned, actually, about adding the ability for apps to test themselves, so that they can check if an update worked, and if not, then they can roll themselves back rather than you having to find out what went wrong and do it yourself. Wow. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, sounds, and there's cool. One of the other features he talked about was I saw it in one of the sessions today, was about the A/B. So you actually have, if you have a system update that updates the underlying core, you actually have two partitions, one with the current running version and one with the new version. And when the new version is installed, it flips across to the other partition, but keeps the older one there. So in the event that the new one is broken, it'll flip back and reboot into the old version so that you're not left in a broken state. I think the goal is that you never end up with an update breaks your system, because it can always roll back the entire system or roll back the application and the data that was broken.
Wow.
So forward isn't the only direction you can go. You know, at the moment, if you if you're on 1410, for example, and you upgrade to 1504, and as a result of upgrading to 1504, that breaks your workflow somehow, you know, the only way you can go is fix that bug or reinstall from scratch and lose everything. You know, you could try and fix the bug or move forward to like 1510 or, you know, some patch that's, you know, in the future. But with this, you can roll back until it's safe to roll forward again.
So you've talked about the AB there, and I suppose an important thing to point out, because until today when I listened to the presentations, I wasn't completely clear on what Ubuntu Core and what Snappy was and why it was Ubuntu Snappy Core. So Ubuntu Core is basically a base operating system, right? It's the kernel and all of the necessary gubbins that make a core operating system. In much the same way as Core OS is doing things at the moment, I think it's fair to say. Would you agree with that?
I don't know much about Core OS and how they do it, but it's similar in there that it's a very, very minimal install. And on top of that, yeah, you put your snaps that can contain individual applications or a suite of applications, like you said, like Zimbra would be a suite of applications.
Or a whole desktop environment.
But or a whole desktop environment. But, and one of the things that was mentioned was that, yes, there will be this Snappy desktop, the Snappy Core desktop, which will feature Unity 8, and it's the future of, Ubuntu Next, as we call it, like the next generation of the Ubuntu image that you might download and install. But the key thing that a lot of people have been worried about was, well, what does that mean for me who's running 1504, or, you know, when I get to 1510, what happens to me? Do I suddenly switch to Unity 8 and I, you know, lose my Unity 7 favorite things, or, you know, applications that required something in Unity 7 that is no longer there in Unity 8, for example. And he said that the community would decide when Unity 8 becomes the default desktop. So
yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't, because he said basically somebody, he did like a Q&A bit at the end, and somebody said, will Unity 8 be the default in 1604, and he said no, and then he said the community will decide. I didn't know whether he meant, if the community says, yeah, we really want Unity 8 to be default in 1604, it will be, or whether that meant that he'll wait until the community think it's ready and then the next release it will be default.
I think it's more I don't know if you remember last season, or it might have been the season before, we interviewed Mark on the phone.
I do remember that.
And I remember him saying, being quite upfront about the fact that Unity, we may have been a little bit too aggressive in putting Unity as the default desktop when we did.
Yeah.
We won't make that mistake again in the future. And I think that's a callback to that, is the Unity 8 decision is to not make that same mistake again. And when he says when the community thinks it's ready, I think what he's looking for is for people to tell us, you know, what they need out of Unity 8 and to help steer it in the right direction. You know,
what ready is.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, we know what our use cases are, and, you know, we can list out what we think many of the use cases are, but there are people out there who have interesting and strange uses for Ubuntu and, you know, the Linux desktop in general. And there may be some compelling reason why their, you know, installation of 50,000 desktops can't move to Unity 8 because of, you know, whatever reason that might be. And we need to know about those things, because we don't want to push Unity 8 on people when it clearly isn't ready for every possible use case.
But then it's never going to be ready for every possible use case, is it? So isn't this a sort of, you know, how long is a piece of string? Well, when the community says it's ready, they're never all going to say it's ready, are they?
No, I think he wants broad consensus. I don't want to, like, try and guess what his, you know, definition of what the community deciding is. But I think, you know, I think what he's getting at is we won't just go, splat, you've got Unity 8, is what he's getting at.
What would make sense is rather than going, saying, are you ready yet? And the community goes, no, okay, we'll wait another one. It sounds like it's more of a, if you define what you want out of it when we've done it, then it's going.
Right. We need some criteria.
Yeah.
You can't tell us the day afterwards to say, yeah, well, this is no good for me.
Yeah.
You know, tell us now. We need to know now. And that's part of the reason why things like the snappy desktop image is being made for 15.10 is because we know that 16.04 is an LTS. It would be great if people got the 15.10 image, tried it out, and said, oh, actually, yeah, we can do these things, but then there's this 25% that we can't do, and this is the list of things we can't do, and here are the ways in which, you know, it could be improved. That would be great. You know, we need that feedback. We can't just sit in a box and throw it over the wall and say, there you go, that's done. That's not going to work.
What else did he talk about?
He mentioned a certain new flavor of Ubuntu coming into the fold.
Called Ubuntu Mate, he said.
Yes, Ubuntu Mate.
Yeah, that was nice to see. Yeah. I think Martin's fallen asleep now.
No, I think it's best.
Or he's been disconnected.
It's best I don't comment on my own stuff.
No, that was nice. I appreciate that personally. I thought it was nice to welcome a new flavor into the fold. And I saw today as well, Rick Spencer also mentioned it and actually showed a slide of Ubuntu Mate Remix, and it was a PowerPC screenshot as well.
Yeah, it's the PowerPC port, yeah.
Which is even more amazing because there aren't that many desktops that run on a PowerPC machine. So yeah, that was really nice to welcome.
It was nice. You know. It was nice to get a mention, and more so for the recognition of everyone in the community that's made it happen, and we finally got there. So yeah, it was good.
It's really cool.
And there was also a hint of a device as well.
Yeah, well, it was a pretty heavy hint. He did say there will be an Ubuntu phone which is convergent this year.
Yes.
Is what he said. So I assume that this is the Meizu phone, which we've seen
No.
Oh, so a different company, a different phone.
I think I've said enough, but it's not the Meizu phone.
Okay, but, he said that that they were hoping to be able to release this more widely than they had initially intended to, mm-hmm. which is good. So in more countries, it'll be available in more countries.
Oh no, that is specifically the Meizu. I think.
Oh, okay.
What he's talking about there is the Meizu device, that it will be available more widely than we originally thought.
Oh, yes.
Right. But then. That.
But there's also.
But there's another device, ooh. Which is a convergent device. Yeah.
Okay.
That will have some of those convergent features, which is exciting because I'm looking forward to that.
It's
as well.
Super exciting because having qualified the fact that I'm wrong about everything, I had a prediction earlier this year that Ubuntu were going to do the convergent thing and beat everyone to it and justify why all these mobile devices are getting more powerful with more memory and more capabilities, and bringing a desktop to a handheld or mobile device is what they're going to do. And I'm dangerously close to being right about some sort of technology prediction here, which is that'd be a first.
Right, well, before I say anything I shouldn't, I think we should wrap up that segment. Thank you.
And now it's time for Command Line Love. And this week's command line love is list admin.
Yay!
Oh, it sounds exciting.
Yay!
Oh, yeah. I use it every day.
Go on, Alan, what is it?
So last week we mentioned that Mailman 3 is now available.
Yeah.
And Mailman...
Was that last week already?
Yeah, I know. Time flies. So Mailman is very popular for managing mailing lists. And the tools to manage Mailman are a bit lacking, and that's what they've been improved tremendously in Mailman 3, apparently. But one of the things that you have to do when you're moderating a mailing list is you have to deal with things like people sending email from the wrong email address, like they email the mailing list from their work account or the wrong Gmail account, or you have to deal with people who send spam to the mailing list, and you have to reject that kind of stuff. And there is a web-based tool in old Mailman, pre-3.0, but it's a bit clunky. It's not very pleasant to use. And that's where list admin comes in. So list admin is a command line way to manage Mailman mailing lists. So if you're an administrator of a Mailman mailing list, or you think Mailman might be a useful tool for managing mailing lists, then list admin is for you. And
unless you're using Mailman 3, presumably.
Well, that's unlikely, but I don't know if the API is backward compatible or not. But anyway, you configure list admin with an ini file in which you configure the server where the mailing list is, and the moderator's password, which is a bit clunky because that means you've got passwords in plain text in an ini file somewhere on your file system, which is a bit nasty. So be it.
It's the Mailman way.
Yes. Well, yes. And then you just run list admin. And if you're an administrator, you just run list admin periodically, like once a day or depending on how busy your mailing list is. You run it and it just presents each email to you, and you can either drop it so it doesn't arrive on the list, which is what you would do with spam. You just press D. Or you would reject it. So maybe someone is trying to send a mail with a huge attachment. So you reject it, and then you can type a line that says, yeah, please remove the attachments, or remove your signature, or something like that, and then press enter. But it's a super fast way of dealing with all the, for want of a better word, crap that comes into the moderator's inbox if you're a list admin.
Cool. Well, there you have it. That's all the command line love for this week.
And now it's time for the news. Galen emailed back.
No,
again
no, it isn't.
We read out his feedback about his. No.
This is the feedback, not the news.
It's not the news. Oh, the feedback.
No, it just says feedback.
Yeah. I'll,
we were so close
I
to
know,
the end.
I know. And, no. and if we did edits and everything, this would be fine. But okay. And now it's time for the feedback. Galen email.
Seamless.
Galen email back in after we read out his feedback about his ThinkPad X201 overheating in episode 6.
Many thanks for saying what laptop you use. Well, I ordered a new heatsink and fan as well as the thermal paste and spent my Sunday morning installing it. I certainly removed a lot more thermal paste than I ended up using. So the bottom line is it's working again, phew, but I ended up with 2 screws extra. I did disassemble it again, but it wasn't obvious where they went.
Oh, I'm sure they weren't important.
I know where they go. They go in the bin. That's where they go.
They go in the screw drawer for another day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Little pot o' screws.
Yeah.
Matthew Cucuzela? Sorry, Matthew.
Keep going.
Yeah. Emailed us about supporting Linux through purchasing hardware.
Glad you decided to podcast for another year. You get extra points in my book for being so closely affiliated with Ubuntu and still being very fair and objective. Sometimes. In general, that's rare these days. Oh, thanks very much. Also, thanks for your segment on supporting Linux through purchasing hardware with the Linux pre-installed. I'd never heard of Zareason and was glad to hear about another successful vendor like this. My last laptop was purchased from System76. Lately, I've been looking for a big monitor and one of those mini PCs instead of the bulky desktops. I was glad to see that both System76 and Zareason offer these now with pretty good specs. I'll probably buy from one of these vendors soon and agree it's important to support Linux in this way, even if it's not the cheapest way to go. I really like the Linux ecosystem, and that's all I run at home. Although at work we use Windows and sometimes Macs. That's fine. Thank you, Matthew. That's very good of you to email in and let us know.
I'm glad you found another supplier as well. Isaac Carter, also recently appointed into the Joe Rest podcast, emailed in to complain about the music and how he supports Linux.
Love the podcast. Would love it a bit more if someone would please change the music. No, we won't. Anyways, You were asking how we supported Linux. Financially, I support Linux through magazine subscriptions to Linux Format, Linux Journal, and Linux Voice, as well as contributing to most Linux podcasts that I listen to. I use a Mint and Ubuntu Mate on my home machines. I'm also currently learning the Linux kernel to support the kernel codebase, as well as learning Python to help support the Mint codebase. I have become more vocal at work on why we should start using Linux over Mac. I also encourage friends and family to use Linux instead of Windows or Mac when they decide to purchase a new computer.
Excellent. Yet more Ubuntu Mate users.
Yeah. Oh dear.
The music,
Unity better watch out.
The music won't change until somebody sits and listens to a whole load of tracks with exactly the right criteria and then does some editing for us.
Is this some as yet undefined criteria?
Pretty much. We did start doing this, because I quite like something a bit more rocky, but then, not rocky, but a bit more rock. But then all the other podcasts are a bit more rock, so then we wouldn't stand out as much.
This is really part of the identity of the podcast, isn't it, the music now?
Exactly.
I'll tell you something. When I was at the Raspberry Pi Jam, one of the guys there, it was Albert, in fact, he uses the music for this ringtone on his phone because he can be sure nobody else has that ringtone. Yeah.
I've told this story before, but I'm going to tell it again because there might be people who haven't heard it. Where I worked 4 or 5 years ago, I was sat at my desk and I actually had the song as the ringtone on my phone as well. And my phone rang and the guy who sat behind me, who was a slightly older gentleman, went, crazy words, crazy tune, which is the name of the song. And I went, yeah. And he actually has a vinyl 75 of that song. And he listens to it and he enjoys it. And so, that's the first time anyone has ever recognized it, not for being the Ubuntu podcast theme tune, but for being what it actually is, a body of work someone made 70 years ago.
Wow.
I want to keep it for that reason.
I think so.
And finally, Nebuchadnezzar left a comment on our website. See, I managed that one fine. To commiserate with Laura about pages reloading in mobile browsers.
The thing with the reloading pages annoys me on Android as well. I know the explanation about the RAM already. However, it happens on my Nexus 6 as well, and that's got 3 GB of RAM. I also read that it's a JavaScript thing which forces the site to reload the page. However, disabling it didn't help. I really don't get why this has to happen. I get the loading it back to memory, but why reload the page? Does the content not get stored somewhere when the application gets kicked out of memory?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
Ask a web browser developer person. If anyone knows why pages have to reload on mobile browsers, other than the browser loading, then send us some feedback along with any other feedback to show@ubuntupodcast.org. And that's the end of your feedback.
And that's it for episode 10. We'll be back next week when we'll have more news, comment, and discussion. And by then, we'll know who's won our general election.
Oh yeah, I'm staying up late to watch that.
Me too. I've got half a day off work the next day.
Oh, I should probably do that as well. Yeah, okay. Well, thanks everyone, and see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.